Could China help end Russia's invasion of Ukraine? Beijing appears split between supporting its close ally Moscow and condemning the war. So, what are the options for Chinese leaders? This is Inside Story. Hello and welcome to the program. I'm Mohammed Jamjoum. China is one of Russia's closest allies and trading partners. Tense relations with the U.S. and Europe have pushed the neighbors even closer in recent years. But Beijing has come under international pressure to condemn the invasion of Ukraine, which goes against its own stated principle of protecting sovereignty and non-interference. While Russia's finance minister has suggested China could help lessen the impact of Western economic sanctions, a third of Moscow's $640 billion in foreign reserves is held in the Chinese currency yuan. The U.S. National Security Advisor made this warning just before meeting China's top foreign policy advisor in Italy.
We have made it clear to not just Beijing, but every country in the world, that if they think that they can basically bail Russia out, they can give Russia a workaround to the sanctions that we've imposed, they should have another thing coming, because we will ensure that neither China nor anyone else can compensate Russia for these losses.
U.S. media say Moscow has asked Beijing for military help in Ukraine. China's foreign ministry denied this, calling the accusation disinformation.
Recently, the U.S. has been spreading disinformation against China in regards to Ukraine, time after time, with sinister intentions. China's position on Ukraine is consistent and clear, and we have always played a constructive role in persuading peace and promoting talks.
We'll bring in our guests in a moment. First, let's take a closer look at the ties between China and Russia. The two neighbors share a border that's more than 4,000 kilometers long. Their economies complement one another, with energy and raw materials going to China and industrial products heading to Russia. Both are united in their rivalry with the U.S., and their leaders often speak of their country's historical greatness. President Xi Jinping and Vladimir Putin declared a strategic partnership last month. They signed a so-called no-limits agreement where they pledged to support each other no matter what. All right, let's go ahead and bring in our guests in Beijing. Andy Mok, Senior Research Fellow at the Center for China and Globalization. In Brussels, Teresa Fallon, Director of the Center for Russia, Europe, Asia Studies. And in Alexandria, Virginia, Heino Klink, a former U.S. Deputy Assistant Secretary of Defense for East Asia. A warm welcome to you all, and thanks for joining us today on Inside Story. Teresa, let me start with you today. Could China actually help end Russia's invasion of Ukraine? Is this something that's within the realm of possibility?
Well, after all, today is day 19. We haven't seen China actually condemn Russia's invasion of Ukraine at all. So I think that there, as High Representative Joseph Borrell of the European Union had reached out and said that China was the only country that could possibly do some mediation. But I haven't seen too many moves on China's part. But of course, everyone wants a diplomatic end to this disaster. But I think that what's more telling is what happened on February 4th with the joint agreement that was signed by Putin and Xi just in the run-up to the Olympics, which declared the relationship as, you know, beyond limits. So some analysts have seen this as a Molotov-Ribbentrop non-aggression pact. Shortly after that, Putin was able to move his troops from Russia's Far East to Ukraine. So he couldn't have done that without the tacit support of China. So China is walking a tightrope in all of this. It has economic interests with the West, big markets in Europe and the U.S., but at the same time, it has this arrangement with Russia. So they are trying to speak out of both sides out of their mouth, you could say.
Andy, you heard Teresa there talk about this tightrope that China is having to walk right now. It does appear that Beijing is split between supporting Moscow and condemning the war. What are the options right now for Chinese leaders?
Well, I think China's been very clear on this, and I think Teresa's engaging in a little bit of fallacious thinking, or at least fallacious argumentation here, in that I think China absolutely has called for a peaceful resolution to the situation in Ukraine. Condemning Russia would be choosing a side. And I think what the situation really needs, as Wang Yi, I believe, has said multiple times, is really cool restraint, not to exacerbate the situation. And we need to recognize, too, that certainly China, like Russia, like many other countries around the world, face a very challenging situation in dealing with a violent and really schizophrenic, sociopathic country, if we were to just describe the U.S. As a person. Why schizophrenic? Is that because it's fundamentally unreliable. We don't know every 4 years. There could be a 180-degree policy shift, which makes it very, very difficult. The violent part of it, of course, we've seen from Iraq to Afghanistan in recent years, really causing incalculable damage and human casualties around the world. So it's really a difficult situation. I think China is playing a positive role, as our president, Wang Huiyao, wrote in the New York Times today, that really there can be a diplomatic off-ramp, and I think China can play a positive role here.
Andy, just to follow up with you very quickly, because I was going to ask you about that op-ed in the New York Times. That's from your colleague at the Center for China and Globalization. When it comes to this idea of an off-ramp with China's help, is this feasible? And is this a role that Chinese leadership really wants to play right now?
Well, I think that's a very, very good question, in that this is a very, very delicate, difficult situation, I think, for all countries involved. I think the big challenge here is the quote-unquote West, but certainly the U.S. has repeatedly, I think, not recognized the legitimacy of Russia's security concerns, and that this really has exacerbated the situation. And, you know, it seems that the U.S. certainly is willing to fight Russia down to the last Ukrainian. And in this very volatile situation, I think every country can play a role. And China, as a major power, certainly has called for a peaceful solution.
Teresa, I can see that you want to respond, and I'm going to give you that chance. Let me just go to Heino and ask him as well. Heino, what does the U.S. expect from China right now?
The United States, as well as the rest of the world, and certainly the members of the United Nations, expect China to play a productive role. And when I say that, you know, it reflects very clearly on China, its leadership, and the regime led by the CCP, and how it voted in the UN. It abstained. If the Chinese want to actually be a major power on the world stage, and want to be what we used to refer to in the Bush administration, a responsible stakeholder, China certainly needs to step up to the plate. And remember, Russia invaded another United Nations member, a sovereign country, a country, by the way, that China had very good relationship with, a country that joined the BRI back in 2017, if I'm not mistaken. And we see the brutality of the Russian invasion that, in my opinion, the Chinese are complicit in, because at a minimum, they knew that the Russians were going to do that based on their own intelligence capabilities and their own very special relationship with Russia.
Teresa, I'm going to go ahead and give you a chance to respond. I also saw that you were nodding along to some of what Heino said as well, so please go ahead and jump in.
I mean, I think Beijing is trying to do a very carefully cultivated, ambiguous pose. And this, one of their number one foreign policy issues is not to use force to change borders. So Russia did that, yet they chose to ignore that. That's one of their key pillars of their foreign policy. So they are really willing to take a lot from the Russians. In addition to that, a Chinese ambassador has announced that this is a great opportunity for China to buy a lot of things in Russia, because there's all these sanctions in Russia. Companies are leaving Russia. We've seen a long list of all the different organizations willing to leave Russia. So the Chinese are looking at it as a fire sale, as a great opportunity for them. So I think that they have seen a very diminished Russia on their doorstep. So if you look at the Matryoshka doll, we're the smallest little piece right now. And this is much to China's benefit. Also, we saw after 2014, after Russia's annexation of Crimea, Russia turned more towards China, created some energy deals, and, you know, knocked down prices. And in the February 4th agreement, we saw in that agreement, you know, it's in black and white, it's available to everyone free. It's not salacious or fallacious. I don't know which adjective you were using, but I think this is, you know, black and white. We see where Russia and China stood. They said they were creating the new contours of the international order. So we saw this kind of relationship. They've met with each other 38 times, and they've described the relationship between Xi and Putin as the best in 300 years. And let's remember, Xi Jinping spoke to Putin after the invasion. He didn't speak to Zelensky, the Ukrainian leader. So I think we have to keep this in mind. And I think China would love to rebrand themselves as a peacemaker, but we are on day 19, and I think the big ask now will be that Russia's assets, which are in some Chinese banks, should also be sanctioned. Will China, this will be the real bellwether of China's role on the international stage, will they allow their banks to be Chinese, Russian assets to be sanctioned in Chinese banks?
I know it looked like you wanted to jump in. I also want to follow up with you about something you mentioned a moment ago, that abstention in the UNSC by China when it comes to that resolution that would have deplored Russia's invasion of Ukraine. The reason I want to ask about that is because that was taken to mean different things by different players. Some interpreted it as a diplomatic win by Russia. Some said it was a diplomatic win by the West. Do you believe it was a diplomatic win for either the West or for Russia, and why?
Well, I think it's indicative of China walking that tightrope, quite frankly. But at a certain point in a nation's history, countries and their leaders need to make choices. Does the PRC want to be on the side of Putin, who has launched invasions against a number of its neighbors, Georgia, Ukraine, in Europe, as well as participate in the brutal suppression of people in Syria and other places in the world? Or does China want to be on the side of the vast majority of the countries that voted for that resolution? I think it is a win in that at least the Chinese did not align themselves with North Korea, Belarus, and Eritrea. That is a win, I guess you could say, for us. But again, how reflective is that of the strategic calculus that's going on in Zhongnanhai?
Andy, is there any concern among... Yeah, Andy, I'll let you jump in. Actually, go ahead, and then I'll ask my question.
Well, I want to make a couple of points here. First, I think Teresa talks about this very important notion of sovereignty, which China makes a cornerstone of its foreign policy. But I think some people perhaps being mischievous, or some people perhaps not fully recognizing the complexities of the situation in the Ukraine, is that China can respect sovereignty while also acknowledging that sovereignty can be forfeited when a country acts in a way as to be so threatening to a neighboring country that some action has to be taken. And I think that we can accept this more nuanced view as legitimate without taking a position on whether what Ukraine did rises to that level. And I think the other thing that we risk falling into, I think, a very typical U.S. Binary Manichean way of thinking, is that there's only two sides. You're either with us or against us. And I think what China has shown is that there is a third way. And China is saying, we hope we are on the side of development, peaceful development. We hope that every country that has some stake, whether that's economic, political, humanitarian, really should do what it can to foster a peaceful solution here. And I think this is really the key issue, that the framing is problematic and, you know, very typical of the way the U.S. approaches these. And it's also important to point out, too, it is really not the whole world here that is on the side of the U.S. and Western Europe. India also abstained, the UAE as well. And I believe India is making active preparations for a rupee-ruble settlement system. So there really is a third point of view here that perhaps is the most effective and likeliest way out of this terrible situation.
Andy, let me ask you this as a follow-up. If this continues to drag on, is there a growing concern among officials in China that if China continues to stand by Russia, at some point the costs are going to outweigh the benefits?
Well, again, I would question that premise, Mohammed, that is China standing by Russia? Now, certainly, Teresa is correct. In early February, President Xi and Putin did sign and announce a relationship that often is described in the media as, quote unquote, no limits, a new kind of relationship. And that is not, I think, mutually exclusive with wanting to see a peaceful solution being an honest broker, perhaps, in this. And that this is a complex situation. Everyone from George Kennan to Henry Kissinger to John Mearsheimer has said, including, I think, some U.S. ambassadors, previous ambassadors, have said that what the U.S. is doing in the Ukraine clearly is a provocation and is going to cause this kind of reaction from Russia sooner or later. Mm-hmm. And as the Chinese like to say, perhaps some self-reflection is in order here.
Teresa, from your vantage point, what is China going to be expecting from Russia? And, you know, you mentioned earlier that so far Chinese banks, financial entities have not cut ties with Russia. Is there a scenario that exists where you think that that could happen at some point?
That remains to be seen, how China responds to the international community's China's not helping whatsoever on sanctions. We know that. So when the international community asks them to support these sanctions, I think that will be about whether they're really an international player and if they have good intentions. I think that the fact that this agreement was inked February 4th and the invasion took place on 23rd speaks volumes. We also know that China started to fill their strategic petroleum reserve, SPR, after meeting with Putin, and also buying more grain and wheat, understanding most likely you can draw your own conclusions that a war was on its way. So I think that, as Heino Klink pointed out, Ukraine had great relations with China, so they're not really much of a friend, are they? In fact, China got their first aircraft carrier from the Ukrainians, and they said it was going to be a casino. So we've seen a lot of deception in this relationship. And let's not forget, the way this is being framed by Andy is pretty much what the Russians are saying. So it's almost a magnification of the disinformation. Most analysts see the invasion of Ukraine as unprovoked, and I think that to say that Ukraine has no sovereignty, it's not a country, that is definitely right out of Russia's narrative. And lastly, the final point I'd like to make in regard to disinformation, we've seen Chinese officials, it was printed in Xinhua, they wrote a quote from the High Representative Joseph Borrell of the EU saying China was a peace-loving superpower, but he never said that. So this disinformation machine is just rolling on.
Heino, if China
Teresa,
were to play,
would you consider George Kennan
Andy,
Russian disinformation as well?
Andy, I'll let you make your point in just a minute. Let me just ask Heino a question here.
Sure.
Heino, how do the U.S. and Western allies feel about having China potentially play a role in de-escalating this conflict?
Well, if China were to play a positive role, it would be welcomed. I just think that many of us who have spent their professional lives working with the Chinese and the Chinese government and the Chinese Communist Party are not particularly optimistic. The Chinese will view this as an opportunistic chance to better their position both bilaterally with Russia, take advantage of the economic straits that the Russian regime finds itself in, as well as to play a spoiler role vis-a-vis the United States and Europe, and not just Europe, but the West, meaning other countries such as Japan and Australia. I think fundamentally, we cannot lose sight of the fact that what we see today is a blatant violation of national sovereignty, of the territorial integrity of Ukraine, and the Russians launching a brutal onslaught against the civilian population of Ukraine. The fact that Ukraine is a sovereign country with a president that was elected by the people wanted to have closer relationships with the European Union and NATO should not have been a casus belli to necessitate or warrant Russians putting in almost 200,000 troops and killing thousands of Ukrainian civilians.
Andy, I do want to ask this. Russia's finance minister had suggested that China could help lessen the impact of Western economic sanctions. How much will China be able to help Russia economically?
Well, I want to respond to Teresa's point about Russian disinformation. I mean, would she or would Teresa, would you then consider, again, George Kennan, Henry Kissinger, John Mearsheimer, several former U.S. ambassadors who've said exactly the same thing, also purveyors of Russian disinformation? And, you know, I would say that certainly the loss of life in Ukraine is tragic. But is it any more brutal than the U.S. Attacks against Iraq and Afghanistan, where countless civilians, women, children were killed and maimed and made homeless? Is it any less brutal?
Teresa, let me ask you, do you think that there is a scenario that exists whereby China would cut ties with Russia, not just economic ties, diplomatic ties, condemn the invasion of Ukraine, the conflicts going on? And if so, what would China stand to lose or gain as a result?
I think the international community would love to see China support international norms, UN conventions, and all of these important issues. But their actions so far on day 19 have proven that they aren't doing that, and that they are trying to actually, it would be welcomed, as Hayano said. But I think what they haven't, it's been a stress test, and they've actually did a lot of learning, because Russia, what they've done in Ukraine, China can watch how the international community has responded. And I think they were not expecting to see such a united West. They expected to see a divided Europe, maybe a weakened NATO. But in, and we've even seen neutral countries like Switzerland, traditionally neutral, actually join in on the sanctions on the banks. And also we've seen neutral countries like Sweden send lethal aid to Ukraine. So the world is changing. And I think China better, you know, wake up to what is happening. And that's this idea of a third way. There is, you know, law and there is against law. So either they support the international community and the United Nations and what they've signed up to. In addition to that, Beijing also signed an agreement to guarantee Ukraine's sovereignty. It was a side agreement along with the Budapest Memorandum in 1994. So the PRC is not honoring their agreement there either. So mm-hmm. I think that it's all nice to say these things diplomatically, but what are they really doing? I think now is the time, and I think the meeting that will take place in Rome will really show mm-hmm. whether China is actually going to do something or if they're just going to talk a lot.
Hayano, is there a lot of concern among American officials right now that China would be able to lessen the impact of economic sanctions on Russia, that they would be able to help blunt the impact on Russia through workarounds or through economic support?
That is certainly a concern. And the unfortunate history of Chinese enforcement of sanctions, United Nations imposed sanctions, for instance, against other countries such as North Korea, has not been particularly stellar. So there's certainly a precedent for the Chinese not enforcing sanctions. I think what we see today in Europe, what Russia's actions have done in terms of pushing more and more countries towards and wanting to integrate with the European Union, wanting to integrate with NATO, and diplomatically, for instance, doing unprecedented things, such again as is the case with Switzerland that Teresa mentioned, should also serve as a parallel example to China. Because in the Asia Pacific, we have seen over the last several years, Chinese actions pushing more and more countries to start to form a bulwark against Chinese aggression, Chinese assertiveness, and Chinese economic coercion. And I think what we will find is that those trends, which are not favorable to China, will continue. And what will be necessary to stop those types of trends will be for China to start becoming more productive in opposing malign activities.
All right. Well, we have run out of time, so we're going to have to leave the conversation there. Thanks so much to all of our guests, Andy Mok, Teresa Fallon, and Heino Klink. And thank you, too, for watching. You can see the program again anytime by visiting our website, aljazeera.com. And for further discussion, go to our Facebook page. That's facebook.com/AJInsideStory. You can also join the conversation on Twitter. Our handle is @AJInsideStory. For me, Mohammed Jamjoum, and the whole team here, bye for now.